Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
We've got two big releases to talk about, three smaller releases. We are going to lead off with the biggest release and the one that everyone's talking about and the one that has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Last time I checked, it was 123 positive reviews to zero negative reviews. Oh. Get out.
Get out.
Get out. Then an animated film called Rock Dog. That can get right out. And then three smaller ones. But first, what are we drinking tonight? We went in a totally different direction, Hannah, didn't we?
We did.
We always drink wine. All 99% of the time we drink red, 1% of the time we drink white. What are we drinking tonight, Hannah?
We are drinking some beer that you bought, and I have absolutely no idea what it is. It's kind of a lighter beer, I suppose.
It is the type of beer is called Saison.
Mm-hmm.
It's originally from Wallonia, the French-speaking part of Belgium. But it's a local brewery. It is called Waradaka Brewing Company, which is up just up north in Montgomery County in Laytonsville. It's actually next door, co-located with a 230-acre horse farm. But they also last year opened a brewery, and this is their Saison, which is kind of a pale ale. Man, it tastes really, really carbonated, actually.
Yes.
Very fruity.
It is.
But the name is why I got it. And tell me what movie attaches to the name Cupid's Curse.
Cupid's Curse. So that's the name of the beer?
Mm-hmm. It's called Cupid's Curse. It's from Waradaka Brewing Company.
And that's supposed to relate to one of our movies today?
I think it straight up relates to Get Out.
Oh. Well, you know, these are some stretches there, Charlie. But
Cupid.
Okay.
Cupid.
I can kind of see it.
Tell the audience here why Cupid's Curse kind of sort of relates to Get Out.
I guess it's because it's a relationship horror movie.
It opens on a couple in love. Chris, played by Daniel Kaluuya, is an African-American male, and his girlfriend, Rose, played by Allison Williams. I've never seen the show, but apparently Allison Williams is all over the show Girls.
Mm-hmm. And she was Peter Pan, I believe, in the NBC.
Did you see that?
No.
Nobody saw that. They are a couple who've been together 4.5-5 months now, so it's time. It's time to meet the parents. Naturally, his question is, do they know I'm black? And she says, what do you mean? Does that matter? And he doesn't say it out loud, but yes.
Of course
it matters. Mm-hmm. We've had 8 years of Barack Obama. The liberal elite, especially in this film, likes to pretend we live in a post-racial world. Race doesn't matter. I don't even see race. Rose's dad, played by Bradley Whitford, calls him my man, gives him a hug, said he would vote for Obama for a third term, and he's proud his grandfather lost to Jesse Owens in the 1936 Olympics. But not all is on the right foot. Not all is that as it seems in this out-of-the-way, secluded McMansion estate. Hannah, what's going on?
So it's in upstate New York. So here's this couple who's living sort of in the city, and they go out to visit her family in this, you know, one of these really ridiculously upscale neighborhoods. And you can't really tell people too much about it. The less that anyone knows going in, the better this one is. But in essence, it's if you remade Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and met that up with the Stepford Wives and put a totally horror spin on it, you would have Get Out.
I loved how Jordan Peele wrote this movie and directed it. Jordan Peele is Peele from Key and Peele. We saw him last year in Keanu, remember, with the, mm-hmm. with the cat. He also wrote that movie. But this is his feature film directorial debut. And he's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. People love this film. Our audience clapped, cheered, hollered, threw their fists in the air. Loved this movie.
This reminded me of when I saw Hell or High Water, that it was a surprise, that I did not expect to necessarily like it. And I came out of the movie going, wow, that was really good. And so this was that same kind of impact. And you, absolutely have to just sit back and see where it goes. It's got some jolting scare comedy in there. It's got some horror elements. It's I loved in this movie, in addition to the relationship between the guy and the gal, you've got the guy's best friend, Ray, who's the TSA agent, and he provides the comic relief in this movie, and he is sort of what everyone else is thinking. He says what everyone is thinking.
It's about time someone in a horror film says, "What are you still doing there? Get out!
Get out!
Leave
get out.
The house! Take the keys! Get in the car! Right. Leave!"
You're going up to your white girlfriend's house to meet the parents, and they don't know you're black. Get out! It's just great social commentary, but told in such a way that is refreshing and unique, and just has all these crazy different elements going for it. And even people who would say, "Oh, that's I don't like horror movies," for instance, this one just has enough of so many different things going for it. And then the message is so timely that I just think it's a good movie for the time and will appeal to a lot of different people, and is a surprisingly good movie.
If you had to classify it, if you had to pigeonhole it, yes, it is technically a horror film. But more than that, it is a satire. It is a social commentary. And the first 3 minutes of the film, racial expectations turned on their head.
Mm-hmm.
We see it's a classic opening. A man is lost. He's lost in a neighborhood, and he's kind of keeping his head down, and he's shuffling along, hoping to find the house he needs to go to. He's hoping nobody notices him, nobody stops him. It's a black man in a well-to-do, affluent, you can tell, white neighborhood. Normally, it'd be a white guy in a run-down neighborhood, but not this time. And as brilliant, brilliant start. He took something we're familiar with and turned it 180 degrees. I wanted to point out some of the performances here. There's a couple people who have to switch. They go from happy to sad very quickly. That is Lakeith Stanfield. You can see him. He's on the TV show Atlanta on FX. Just won a Golden Globe for best comedy series.
Mm-hmm.
He played Logan, the guy that Chris runs into at the party. Logan.
Oh, right.
And the housekeeping staff: Betty Gabriel as Georgina, the housekeeper, and Marcus Henderson as what's his name, Walter, the groundskeeper. They each have specific scenes where if you have to watch their face and their facial tics and their eyes. They all just do an extremely stellar job.
That's true. They really do have to emote a certain amount of different vibes. You just catch all these little nuances in their performances and in all the characters. The whole point is, you know, that this family greets Chris with open arms and they're progressive and everything looks fine on the surface. And then as things start to change, you never know for sure what's real, what's genuine, and what's not, and whether Chris is being paranoid about certain things and that they really aren't so bad. And so it's very interesting to just kind of see the shift that goes on throughout this movie. And it has a few moments of gore. And so there's definitely, it is a social commentary, dark comedy wrapped in a horror movie.
Congratulations, Jordan Peele. Mm-hmm. This is an outstanding start. People were worried when you guys entered your television show, but looks like you're on to bigger and better things. And this is 2017's best film so far by a long shot.
Yeah, actually, I think I would agree with you there.
Break. Let's talk about a film that's not 2017's best film so far. It's not even 2017's best animated film so far. It's called Rock Dog. Hannah, I took my son to his first film.
Yes.
My 4-year-old son, I took him to his first film, and in the first 5 minutes, I was bored, so I got nervous. If I'm bored, he must be feeling numb, and I said, "Oh man, I'm going to lose him, but thank God he noticed that movie theater chairs fold up, and he could fold himself up, and that saved me.
Yes, I noticed that. It was very cute. I enjoyed watching him. watching him watch this movie was more entertaining, I think, than the movie itself. It's fine for young kids. I mean, it's certainly not one of these films that's going to resonate among adults on a different level. It is strictly for the younger kids, I guess. And it means well, you know, it's about this, it's a mastiff, what's that, like a sheepdog guard dog?
He's a Tibetan mastiff.
Tibetan mastiff.
And they guard sheep. They guard sheep from the wolves.
Yes, from the wolves. And that's, so this one poor dog just doesn't really want to do that for a living for his entire life. And he's basically in charge with, he's supposed to take over for his dad, you know, protecting all the sheep on Snow Mountain. And he wants to go to the big city and become a rock star. And that's basically the gist of this movie. And it needed more music. Actually, I think one of the things that surprised me the most and that dragged it down the most was the minimal amount of music that was incorporated into a movie called Rock Dog.
The moral of the story is probably even familiar to my son, who's only seen one movie in his entire life. It's chase your dreams, follow your dreams, but remember where you came from. Bodhi is meant to take over for his father. He's meant to be a security dog, guard those forgetful sheep. But he's got music in his heart. He's got rock and roll in his heart. A radio literally falls from the sky. He hears rock and roll, and he's got to go to the big city because that's where rock and roll is in the city. And he hears Angus Scattergood. Angus Scattergood is a cat, but he is a chart-topping cat. He's written all the hits, and he's very British. And he's voiced by Eddie Izzard, and he's very, you could tell he's tired. And he speaks in this British ennui. Oh, yeah, chase your dreams.
And he lives in a mansion with a private recording studio in it.
So Bodhi, voiced by Luke Wilson, so very, you can already hear this very earnest voice. I need to break out of here, Dad. And Dad, J.K. Simmons, who's laying down the law. No, son, he goes footloose on the village. He forbids music, and he locks all the instruments up in a shed. And there's a narrator, Fleetwood Yak, voiced by Sam Elliott. And Sam Elliott's here actually pulling the same duty he did in Big Lebowski. He's just a laid-back observer. And in the Big Lebowski, you can still hear him. There's a man of his time. His name's the Dude. And he does the same thing here. There's a dog of his time, and his name's Bodhi. And there's so much plot. There's Bodhi disobeying his father, running away to the city, meeting Angus Scattergood, writing a song, and there's wolves! And there's wolves trying to kidnap Bodhi, and there's wolves trying to eat the sheep, and it's only 80 minutes long.
That's right. And it felt longer than 80 minutes
felt way
to
longer.
Me. But it's, what is it, maybe like 5 to 10-year-olds would be the target demographic.
This is for young kids. Do not take your middle schoolers.
No
way.
Not at all. It is not a sing or it's really one of those ones that is basically like watching a Saturday morning cartoon that's just a bit longer and has a fine message. I mean, there's really nothing, you know, for kids that don't like really scary stuff, I think it's okay because
nothing scary.
There's nothing scary.
But there's nothing funny in it either.
Yeah, it just is, and it's okay, but I don't think we'll remember it a month from now.
It is autobiographical. It is based on a Chinese graphic novel called Tibetan Rock Dog by one of China's first and most popular rock and rollers. He's from Tibet. His name's Zhang Jun. And he said his parents wanted him to go into international finance. And he's like, no, I got rock and roll in my heart, Ma. So he went off to the city and he became a rock star. It's directed by a guy named Ash Brannon. He was one of the three directors of Toy Story 2. He also co-directed 2007's Best Animated Film nominee, Surf's Up. Never saw that. I think it was about penguins.
Missed that one.
But and just like last week, we talked about The Great Wall, which was a Chinese Hollywood co-production. So is this one.
That's right.
It was animated here in the United States. In fact, like Venice Beach. But the story and everything else, probably most of the money, is from China.
Yeah, it was kind of strange because it looked like, I think it was already released in China,
like
too.
Middle of last year.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know if they just did different voiceover in English for the American audiences, but it looks like Shanghai. So it has that Times Square look, but when you realize that everything is in Chinese, it reminded me a lot of downtown Shanghai.
Yeah, there's really nothing special about this film. It's not funny, and you can tell it's a mini-budget. All the drawings are really of close-up characters. There's no detail in the background, and there's nothing going on here.
It's not bad, but it's not great, and it's really just if you need to distract the kids for 80 minutes.
Now, for something completely different, there's a documentary out this week, and it is, one of my favorite tweets on earth is Kedi, which is the Turkish name for cat. It's the Citizen Kane of street cat movies in Istanbul.
Wow. That's deep.
Kedi is actually about hundreds of thousands of cats in Istanbul who live on the streets, and the humans who tolerate them, the humans who love them, who give them food, who give them space. And, you know, the citizenry of Istanbul, you know, they identify with this. Like, yeah, our city is run by cats, and it has been for however long there's been a Constantinople. And it centers on, like, a handful of cats, like seven cats. My favorite one probably being the psychopath cat.
It struck close to home, huh?
And it also focuses on some humans who get catharsis out of it, or what human qualities they project onto these cats. What did you think about Kedi?
Well, I jotted down the quote from, I think it was the director, and it's, "In Istanbul, the cat is more than just a cat. The cat embodies the indescribable chaos, the culture, and the uniqueness that is the essence of Istanbul." But in the end, it's a cat movie.
This is a 90-minute YouTube cat video.
It is a cat movie. If you take a documentary version of a dog's purpose and you turn it into a cat movie, that's what this is. It's a cat's purpose in Istanbul.
But it's nonfiction.
Yes.
It is a first-time director. Jada Torin is her name. And it is G-rated. You know, there's no cats die. They barely fight. There's some hissing. There's no neutering.
No nudity or neutering.
But it also, every now, you know, it takes a break and it just looks at Istanbul as a city. I think there's a lot of drone footage I saw, like gliding over rooftops, right, and over the Bosporus.
Well, I think they were going for this juxtaposition of the overhead shots where you see the beautiful cityscape and the water, and then you see the cats at ground level and you see what they're saying. And so they're seeing street and people's hands and food, and so their perception of the world is very different, and it seeks to show just how these different humans take to the street cats and take them under their wing, and some are essentially adopted by various people. But they live between the two worlds. They live between almost like they're part wild and part domesticated. It's very interesting. But it's a one-beat movie. So I felt after about 25 minutes, they're cute cats. You know, there's nothing better than when you see a close-up of a cute cat's face, or he's, you know, he or she is like giving some love to the human. And these big burly guys on the waterfront, you know, suddenly are turned to mush, like when one of the kittens looks like he's been attacked by another cat, and the guy takes him to the vet, and you can just tell that he's got a real vested interest in making sure this cat survives. And so it's sweet, but it doesn't go anywhere. It really is just a one-note movie that is great for cat lovers, but if you don't like cats, don't even go near this movie.
I'm fine with cats, but after about a half hour, I got bored, yes, and I still had an hour left. This should have been a documentary short, maybe, yes, about 35, 40 minutes,
I agree.
It would have lost nothing. Still could have had drone footage, still could have focused on like four cats. But I appreciated the break. You know, I didn't have to follow a plot. It wasn't John Wick 2, capping people in the head. It wasn't Silence, 4 hours of Scorsese torture priests. You know, but it was just a break to sit back and watch some cats. But after a while, I was like, all right, I get it. Some catch mice. Some hang out in the restaurant all day. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. That's why some people like watching those YouTube videos as a break. You know, people, I know I've seen a lot on my Facebook feed, people like saying, can we just post a cat video, please? Just to get our minds off of other things. And so this is an extended cat video, but I agree wholeheartedly that it would have been better served being a short, because I don't think it's really something that's worth necessarily paying for in a theater. It just isn't up to that caliber.
And it ignores a lot. Istanbul's got a lot going on right now. They had a recent attempted coup. There have been multiple ISIS bombings in Istanbul and none of that. Nothing.
No, it's not what it aims to be. No. It is a documentary about cats and people waxing poetic about cats.
And unfortunately, it made me think no American city would ever be quirky enough or cool enough to let a couple thousand cats roam around. Like, people would be calling
animal control.
And you know what? I wish one city would try it out because it does look nice to go somewhere and pet a cat.
It's reminiscent. I was in Taormina, Italy, I believe, many years ago, and it was the same. It looked the same. There were cats everywhere. I have pictures galore of all these street cats. And so that's the only other city where I've ever seen it that dominant. But yeah, I don't think the cats would survive very long in an American city.
Not the South. I would try it up north.
Even up north, I don't know. I think I do think animal control would be called in, and we'd see a roundup of cats, and it would be rather sad.
Well, you saw a movie this week I did not see. I loved your one-sentence description of it. Tell me about Bitter Harvest.
You didn't see it? What a shame, because honestly, I mentioned to you, I think you would like this movie slightly better than me. I still don't think you would like it, but you would like it a little more. Yeah, I described it. It's like the Holocaust meets Les Mis, but without the music and set in Ukraine. And
that
so
makes me want to kill myself.
It's inspired by actual events. It tells a story that deserves to be told. I was not familiar with it's called the Holodomor, which is this forced starvation policy that was leveled by the Soviet Union, Stalin, against Ukraine in the 1930s.
A lot of people died.
7 to 10 million people died. And it really wasn't until, I guess, after perestroika and stuff in 1991 about where information came out about a lot of the old Soviet policies. And so this was like one of the, I guess, best kept secret human tragedies of the century. And so it's a movie about a topic that was screaming to get made, but that just a better movie needs to be made about it. But basically, you had these two people. You had Yuri, who's played by Max Irons, who's actually the son of Jeremy Irons. Hmm. And he falls in love from the time he's a kid. He falls in love with this woman, Natalka, played by Samantha Barks, who everyone might remember played Eponine in Les Mis. So,
which one's Eponine?
She's the one who dies and has the big song. She's got a breakout number.
I'm thinking Anne Hathaway. Are we thinking talking about different Les Mis's?
Yeah, no, what was...
Anne Hathaway won an Oscar for that.
Am I getting her wrong? Wait a minute. Who was I getting... Am I getting it confused? Maybe she played her on stage.
Hannah.
I'm sorry. But anyway, I'll have to check my characters out. But it's just, wait a minute. No, I think the one that loved Marius.
Oh, that's Jean Valjean's daughter.
No. She's the one that he loved. But there was like the third wheel.
Oh, that's like a throwaway
role. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. That was her role, and it was sort of like a poignant, she sings the Love Will Make the Flowers Grow song. That's all I can remember.
Sure.
But anyway, they fall in love, but then he's this struggling artist. And the reason it reminds me of Les Mis is that his buddies, they all want to go off to Ukraine, to Kiev, and start trying to build the resistance against the Soviets. And she stays at home on the farm. And it's just, then she's starving to death.
I'm going to guess this is a drama.
It's a drama that is, it's like a war movie. And it's just it just doesn't hold together very well. It hits you over the head too much. Like there's this attempt at symbolism, like from the very opening shots, like these two wild horses are fighting or just kind of crossing paths. And I think it's meant to be like Ukraine and the Soviet Union. And it's just a little much. It just keeps trying to throw all the cliches at you of a romantic drama, tragedy, war, the resistance. And so really fascinating topic, but poorly executed film that just isn't going to necessarily get people interested enough to go into the theaters to see this one, unfortunately.
That is too bad, because that is an important historical topic there that actually really has not been told yet through film.
Yeah, no, I really had not never heard the term, or if I did, it had quickly disappeared from my consciousness of the Holodomor. So I would encourage anyone who is not familiar with that for just a little bit of political and human history to look it up and just realize that this was a pretty awful thing that went on in the 1930s.
Well, our final film is something completely different. It's about a struggling stand-up comedian. It's called Punching Henry. It's technically a sequel from 2009, a film that nobody saw called Punching the Clown. Punching Henry is about comic guitar player. That's a shtick, guitar player on stage with funny songs. Henry Williams. And Henry Williams is a real stand-up comic. And he co-wrote this movie about just his really awkward life. His whole life is like a series of vignettes and awkward situations where it's funny. Like, it's not funny haha, but it's like funny, oh, I'm glad that doesn't happen to me kind of humor. And there's a lot of famous contemporary comedians that pop up in supporting roles. There is a plot. He comes back to Los Angeles to maybe kind of sort of start a television show. Producer, but J.K. Simmons
once
second
again.
Film this week.
And he's everywhere.
He's not making, he doesn't think he's making fun of Henry Williams when he says, I want the biggest loser stand-up comic there is. The guy who makes losers not feel so much like losers. What did you think of Punching Henry?
It's a quirky indie. It's one of those slice of life dramas that, dramedies, I guess, that had some funny moments. So it was punctuated by some really relatable, interesting, funny moments. Sarah Silverman is really funny in it as, I guess she's doing like a radio talk show interview. I don't think we can really name.
I love the name.
name of her show.
I tweeted
show.
This out today. Sarah Silverman does this like podcast, and it's kind of like a Greek chorus. Like every now and then after a funny bit, they'll go back to another segment of this interview. And Sarah Silverman will ask him more questions, and she always says, and you're listening to Mouth Bleep. And it's not a bleep, it's a full-up curse word. And it's like, you know what, this should be a thing. I would listen to this.
I know, but it would be there would probably be some FCC rules about
I don't think it was on the constantly. Radio. It had that podcast feel to it.
I don't know, but it frames the movie, so it goes in and out of this interview that she's doing with
she's
him.
She's the biggest star in this film, other than J.K. Simmons. Sarah Silverman's the biggest star in this film.
And she's doing her usual shtick, yeah. You know, where it's just kind of being that sarcastic, sardonic kind of gal. There's a really strange subplot with one of his, a good friend of his, who he crashes at her house.
Another famous comic, Tig Notaro.
Oh, okay. I did not know who that was. And then, so she's living with her girlfriend in L.A., and so he's sort of crashing their pad, and there's a subplot about potentially using him to have a child. And so that was interesting.
That's one of those motifs where sometimes it's the outside world. He just had bad luck. But in this case, in some other cases, he's his own bad luck. Like, he messes this up, and it's his fault what happens. It's not funny what happens. It's more, oh, that's even, like, I'm heterosexual, and that's gross.
Yeah. Well, even some of the funniest moments are sad. They're funny because they're sadly true, where you talk about things going viral and what makes something go viral. And you've got this Hollywood producer who is listening to these two, you know, influencer types of who are deciding whether or not this comic can become a YouTube sensation, a viral sensation. And they end up, basically, he becomes successful by a fluke. And so the very thing that gives him what he thinks he wants is completely against everything that he believes in. And so he has to make this decision. Do you go for the fame and everything that goes with that? But you have to sort of sell your soul. You have to sell out on your personal sense of your own art. Or do you continue to struggle? And he's just one of these, what do they call him, like a troubadour extraordinaire?
He was
extraordinaire.
A wandering troubadour extraordinaire, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, so, you know, he just goes from club to club.
And the clubs seem so real. Like, his comedy, I was laughing at his songs. His songs are really funny, but when he's at really low-level clubs like Carson City, Nevada, or Dubuque, Iowa, these are the type of audiences that will mouth back at you. They will fight with you. And he's like, you know what, this seems like, you know, people sometimes dream how awesome it would be to be a stand-up comic. Well, you got to pay your dues, and you got to go to clubs like this and face audiences like that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, I don't know. There aren't all that many people that I would send to this one. But if you like a slice of life, quirky indie, and are into the comedy club scene at all, then there's some relatability to it. But I think it's more of a rental.
No, I think it's for people that like, they'll go on Netflix and they'll watch the latest stand-up, like the new hour-long Michael Che thing, or the new hour-long Dana Carvey thing. And this is just, it's almost nonfiction. You know, the life of a struggling road stand-up comic. Yeah. It's directed by a guy named Gregory Vines. And it's minimal. It's not a throwaway movie. But it's, you know, if you really like to watch it, something like, do you remember The Aristocrats? Came out in the mid-2000s. It's there. If you like The Aristocrats, you probably dig Punching Henry. And, you know, if you know who Henry Williams is, you're probably all over it.
That's right. There you go. So anyone who has actually ever heard or seen Henry Williams, this is sort of almost like a...
Why am I saying Henry Williams, by the way? His name is Henry Phillips.
Henry Phillips. Yeah.
And that would happen to him in his club, I bet. Someone would introduce him. This is Henry Williams. And he'd get up all sheepishly, my name's Henry Phillips.
Yeah. Hey, my name's Philip. Imagine that. If you know this guy's comedy at all, then it might be worth checking out. But it feels like almost like a documentary satire.
It does feel like a documentary, or like a mockumentary.
A mockumentary.
This is Spinal Tap.
Yes.
Okay. The Oscars are on Sunday, February 26th, 8:30. Host Jimmy Kimmel. Now, we could right now just go through the entire litany of however 20-some awards. Okay, not going to do that.
No.
And I don't want to talk about the awards that we know who's going to win. Viola Davis is going to win. Just going to happen. La La Land is going to win Best Picture. Viola Davis is going to win Best Supporting Actress. I'm not breaking your heart here. I want to talk about some categories that can go either way. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest category of the night, where people just don't know, is Best Actor.
Yes.
I would, but if I had to put... I don't expect to win, like, you know, in my Oscar pool on this one. I put Denzel. I think Denzel, but I will not be shocked when Denzel loses to Casey Affleck.
And that's funny, because I'm the complete opposite. I put Casey winning, and I would not be shocked to see Denzel win. Because I think if you had asked me 2 months ago, I would have said Casey Affleck was the shoo-in to win this. But momentum seems to be with Denzel right now. I think Casey should win, though, and that is why I have him as my pick for sure.
I think Casey should win as well, but Denzel's got the hot hand, and Casey Affleck, you've been in the news lately, lose you votes in a heartbeat.
It's a shame, because as great of an actor as Denzel is, this movie, Fences, really is a play.
So I finally
screen.
Saw Fences last weekend.
Oh, right.
And I didn't realize, to me, Denzel, his character, was a villain. Straight up villain. Like, he's a great actor villain. And, okay, I can see his side a little bit. But he's a bad dude.
I think August Wilson might disagree with you there. I don't think he is meant to.
He's a villain.
If you're his son, he's a villain. But if you're Viola, there's a reason that her character stayed with him as long as
she
did.
No, we know why she stayed with him, but it doesn't mean she would ever accuse him of being a nice, good guy.
No, and it's so in that way, it's not your typical Denzel. Like, I like the heartwarming, endearing Denzel. This is not him, but it's a role that he perfected on stage, and I think that he plays it. It feels like it feels like you're watching the play.
All right, I don't want to get into a big. Fences
tangent
here.
I'm still Casey. I want Casey.
I think it's 51-49 Casey, yes. But I think Denzel's gonna pull.
It's a toss up.
Oddly enough, so Mahershala Ali gonna win Best Supporting Actor.
I don't care what
you say.
And it should.
Best Actress, I think, is also up for grabs, like a 60-40. I do not think the girl who's gonna win should win. I think Emma Stone's going to win.
I now do too. It should be Natalie Portman.
Natalie, okay, and maybe Isabelle Huppert.
Well, Isabelle Huppert, I mean, nobody outside of critics and the Academy people will have seen Elle. So that's really tough.
They're not voting, so it doesn't matter.
They're not voting, but I think that the voters have to take that into account in some respect. Like, I think they would find it very difficult to give this award to a French actress.
That's like they say, Best Picture is not Best Picture, it's most popular.
I don't agree. I think La La Land is the best
picture. No, and La La Land is also the most popular. Sometimes the most popular wins.
But I'm not sure it's the most popular. There's been a huge backlash.
Hidden Figures
has made more money than La La Land.
It's still not more popular.
I think it is. I think in the populace, out there in the populace, I do think that Hidden Figures has surpassed La La Land as a favorite for more emotional reasons. And I don't know. I just think that La La Land has been divisive and Hidden Figures has been sort of universally
Whoever the accountants are, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Ernst & Young, whoever it is, they never release the vote totals. We never know who came in second and who came in ninth.
They should.
I bet Hidden Figures comes in second.
Yeah. It could. I would not be surprised if that were
the case. Emma Stone walking away. She's got it.
Yeah, she's got the momentum on her side right now, too. So Natalie Portman, I think the problem, while her performance is really, really good in Jackie, I did not like Jackie, the movie, all that much. And so I think that takes away from some of the people who might have otherwise voted for her. If you just took her performance, yes, I think she has the best performance. But if you take the combination of the performance and the movie, I think Emma Stone might get it.
And there's those of us who think Jackie was one of the best films of the year. So another big toss-up category, I think, is original screenplay.
Yes, that's true.
Probably will go to Manchester by the Sea. But I don't think people are going to be paying attention. And I think it's going to accidentally go to La La Land.
I would hope in this case that does not happen.
It shouldn't. It's not the best script. I mean, it's...
It's not. And I always felt...
But I think they're going to be checking La La Land on cinematography, editing, picture, actress, and they're going to accidentally check it for original screenplay.
I'm hoping that it's one of those instances where people are going, okay, La La Land is getting so much. Here's one of those categories where we actually can go with something else. And I would like to see that be almost any one of the other categories. As much as I love La La Land, I do think some of the other screenplays are definitely fall into the category of total originality.
So those are the categories I'm looking at. Are there any categories that you're specifically on the lookout for?
No, I do think that there's... I think some categories are just too tough for anyone to figure out. I finally did see all the live-action shorts. And so I agree. I think you like that
Enemies Inside.
That was probably one of my favorites. There was one other one that...
You liked the Hungarian one, Sing.
Sing. Yeah, so Sing was more...
There's no way that's going to win.
No. So Sing was probably my the favorite from a... The same way Joe's Violin
was one of my favorites. Yes.
It was, to me, the most entertaining of the bunch. And there was the one with the woman with the train that went by every day.
Cute.
If
that was in England, that would have been played by Maggie Smith.
Yeah, but Enemies, the Enemies one, I think, has a little bit of... social timeliness going for it, and so that was probably the most relevant of the bunch.
Zootopia is going to win Best Animation.
Yeah, Zootopia should win Best Animated.
Best Documentary is going to be OJ Made in America.
It should. I hope it does.
No, it should be I Am Not Your Negro, but it will be OJ Made in America.
I just hope it's not, because it was 13th in there.
13th
too.
Is nominated.
I hope it's not 13th, because Ava DuVernay is sort of the most recognizable of the directors in that category, but I do think that the OJ series of that 8 hours or whatever that documentary was really well made and was surprisingly good.
I believe La La Land's going to take the music category, score and song.
It should.
Moonlight will take adapted screenplay.
I think so. That could be. And director?
Damien Chazelle.
Damien Chazelle.
Lock it down.
Yeah.
Over.
I think Damien needs to win that one.
Not about needs, but he will. He just will.
No, but I think that La La Land is the best picture, I think part of the reason it's the best picture is because of the direction of Damien Chazelle. Therefore, I put them both
up
at the top.
But we're so sure of ourselves. We're so sure this is going to be, it's a lock. Put it down. There are, and it's rare, there are years. And I remember when Adrian Brody won Best Actor for The Pianist, and everyone lost their damn minds.
Who was he up against, though?
It,
I don't remember.
But he hadn't won, like, a single award, all award season, nothing.
But and he lost walks a away, lot of weight.
And he walks away with the Oscar, and he makes out with Halle Berry on stage,
It's
a magical moment.
We need a magical moment. I really hope we get one or two or three.
I hope it's nice and political. I hope we get all political.
I know. I'm actually okay with being wrong in some of my picks if it results in some
when Meryl Streep wins for Florence Foster
Jenkins. That would be a huge mistake. And so if they give this to Meryl just so that she can make a political statement, I'll be really annoyed because this is not Meryl's best. And there's too many. Everyone else in that category would deserve it above her this particular year.
What happens when Mel Gibson wins for Hacksaw Ridge?
that would be a really interesting thing. So, and, you know, I'm kind of all for throwing in a wild card in there.
All right. Well, we talked about 2017's best film so far, Get Out.
Get Out. Get out and see it.
One that can get out is Rock Dog. if you have the itching to go to an animated movie and haven't seen Lego Batman yet, go see Lego Batman instead. Keddie, the documentary about Turkish cats.
You really gotta like cats.
Bitter Harvest, Ukrainian Starvation.
Yeah, really interesting subject, not so interesting movie.
Punching Henry. Henry Phillips, gotta like comedians.
Yeah, quirky indie thing.
And there's a wide release that was not screened for critics this week. We didn't see it. They didn't show it to us. I'm not gonna go out and see it. Collide.
Yeah, not a clue.
I think Anthony Hopkins is in there.
Huh, and I'm not so sure about this beer, Charlie.
Yeah, me either. I'm gonna finish it, but it's going slow.
Yeah, I think we're back to wine.
Well, I wanna, you know, Cupid's Curse.
No, absolutely.
Do you agree with me on Cupid's Curse?
No, but that's okay.
Oh, God. Whatever. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. And Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.